Joining us now from the Toronto Star, our friend Bruce Arthur. Bruce, you and I could probably have a fairly robust argument as to whether the Buffalo Bills are the best team heading into the postseason, but they can't be denied they're the best story, correct?
Yeah, I think that's kind of easy. The one thing I will say, and this is me being an absolute labor rights killjoy, is
sure.
all the tributes to DeMar Hamlin this weekend. Like, I like that they did it. I like that they didn't bury him. I like that they didn't just, like, literally or figuratively. I like that he was a central part of what they were doing in terms of game presentation. That's nice. I don't know that it was what really matters, right? To me, the big question with DeMar Hamlin is he going to have health care if he doesn't play again? And is he going to have a pension? Because right now, under NFL rules, he wouldn't. So that's the stuff I was thinking about this weekend.
Okay.
But that said, like, the Buffalo Bills went out and won that game for DeMar Hamlin, right? And they're playing for a teammate who had one of the scariest things that's ever happened on a football field happen to him, and that's saying something. And beyond that, it's also Buffalo, right?
This is a
franchise that had the longest playoff drought between appearances for until they got back in a few years ago. It's a town that loves its team. I think it'll be a really fascinating journey for the Bills, and not just because Josh Allen is one of the most interesting players in football.
And the Buffalo, correct me, Bruce, it is a town that is, I'm looking for hard scrabble, I suppose, if you want to call a major U.S. city hard scrabble. But that said, the town, the identity of that city is really, really, really wound around that team, isn't it?
100%. I have a friend who, one of my best friends, lives in Buffalo. We go down all the time to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And you think you know until you're there. Like, I thought I knew until I was there. Like, my friend is an IT guy. He never cared about football before he moved there. We met at the college newspaper. He never cared about sports. He can tell me everything I want to know about the backup linebackers for the Buffalo Bills. He has strong opinions on how they deploy their safeties. His kid goes to school. If they play on Monday, if a Buffalo Bills game is on Monday night, the schools ask kids to wear Bills gear to school, and they do, right? Like, his kids play flag football. There is a whole architecture in that town. And Buffalo is, I think, hard scrabble's fair. Like, all those Midwestern cities, if you go to Cleveland, if you go to Detroit, even Kansas City, Pittsburgh, I think, moved along faster than the other ones. And Buffalo, that's where there was a ton of money, and then people left. And Buffalo, I think, lost 1 million in population over several decades. It's starting to come back now, and there's more there than there was, and the city's kind of rebounding, but it's still a place that is not a glamorous place. It's as blue-collar an environment for an NFL team you can find outside of Green Bay, I would say. And so, like, I think it's beautiful that the Bills are going to have a shot to win this thing.
We're not many days, weeks even, removed from the NFL issuing that memo. I don't know if it was strongly worded, but it was a reminder that, hey, guys, and they're always guys, you're spending a lot of money on firing coaches. And so here we are now with Cliff Kingsbury having walked the plank, and Lovie Smith, who had the audacity to go win a game when they should have lost. But it's a reminder, though, isn't it, that, God, the NFL, as much as they get right, they get a lot wrong, too, and especially in the area of hiring coaches.
Well, and, I mean, hiring coaches, but also there's, like, the Washington Post did a wonderful piece on racial disparity in the coaching ranks, right?
Yeah.
There's just not that many black coaches, and Lovie Smith means the Houston franchise has fired 2 black coaches in 2 years, I believe it is.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, it's a really hard game. That's the other thing. Like, Sean McVay might leave of his own accord for the Los Angeles Rams because it's a hard job. It drives guys to distraction, and it's difficult. Like, Cliff Kingsbury was a really hot coaching candidate and a guy with a big, fancy, fun pedigree, and now he's out of a job. This is a league where if you don't have an offensive line, if you don't have a quarterback, things can go wrong real fast, and expectations, no matter your franchise, I would say, and it's more than even in other leagues. I think there's more of an expectation in the NFL because things can change so quickly from season to season, and so I think coaching, it's hard to get the coaches right, man, because it is hard to be a great coach in the NFL.
Bruce Arthur joining us here on Low Tide and Jameson from the Toronto Star. Bruce, I want to drag you into a conversation we've been sort of having woven throughout our show today. Oilers lose in Los Angeles last night, and it was a fairly definitive defeat. And then we kind of morphed into leadership and whether the Oilers have the requisite amount of leadership. And I know leadership in 2022 and in hockey and probably in other places looks different than it once did. Like we here in Edmonton, we don't have to work very hard to remind ourselves of what leadership under Messier looked like or Gretzky. And I'd be curious to know what you think of that question and what qualifies as a leader. Is it still your best player?
See, it's interesting. I think that we in hockey both overplay leadership and that it's really important. It just tells you how much we overplay it. Sometimes in this country, we can mythologize it. Like, you need talent. You need speed. You need goaltending, which is something that the Oilers have struggled with this season, right? Like, as much as everybody loves Jack Campbell as a guy. You need talent, but then you also need habits. And that, to me, like, that's something that teams that are good but not great sometimes struggle with. Teams that are bad definitely struggle with, is how hockey is a sport that rewards a really high level of focus and effort and attention on every play. And kind of a giver, right? And you can talk about toughness. Like, you can say that the Oilers aren't tough enough. I think they're not good enough defensively, probably. Mm-hmm. But leadership is what keeps those habits high and keeps that effort high, where you bounce back after a bad game, where you learn to correct your mistakes, where you might run up against the limits of your talent, but you don't run up against the limits of what you have to give, right? And that's where I don't know. I'm not close enough to the Oilers to know if they have enough leadership or whether it's more of a talent thing. But I will say that it's easier if you're – like, Mark Messier was an awesome leader who also happened to play for some awesome teams, right?
Sure.
Like, and I think that's chicken and the egg, because it matters. It mattered that Mark Messier was who he was. That absolutely was a real thing. But if he had been on, let's say, the expansion Ottawa Senators, there's a ceiling. And so with the Oilers – I think leadership isn't always your best players, but your best players do set a tone. The trick is whether you have a team that has enough depth of leadership and depth of talent that those two things feed off each other.
Toronto Raptors, if you look at just at the standings, you go, okay. Where I go with that is, where are they in terms of where their organizational sort of, do they have their feet sort of planted firmly in the, let me rephrase this. Are they looking off to the future, and how far, like, where are they now? Are headed to a reset, in a reset? Whereabouts are they?
Great question. They are asking that internally right now with the Raptors. And the thing is, they have options. If they wanted to trade OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam for, like, pick upon pick upon pick, I would say they could probably get out of there with probably 8 really pretty decent first-round picks. Like, you could do that, plus some young talent, plus some salary cap ballast. You could absolutely do that. You could trade Fred VanVleet for another 2 picks. They could become Oklahoma City like that, because they are selling in a really tight market. If they do that, they would be able to, like, name their price. I don't think they want to do that. It's not the way Masai Ujiri works. He's built this thing up and has always tried to keep a base level of competence, except in the Tampa year. That said, I think this team is heading for a tank because it's the only logical choice. And how do you do that? So essentially, I think what's going to happen is they're going to probably trade one of the core pieces. This is my guess. If they can find a deal, if they arrive at this conclusion in the next couple weeks, and then the question is, we could talk about this for a long time, who is the right guy to move? I don't think Fred VanVleet has the requisite value, given that his contract is expiring. Mm-hmm. You are choosing between OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam. And here's the big thing. Pascal Siakam's 29. Pascal Siakam's 29 and does a lot of the things that you want Scotty Barnes to eventually do. And so I love Pascal Siakam. I think he's exactly the kind of player you want to look for as, like, a leading guy, orchestrates an offense, defends at the other end. He's a wonderful player. The only thing he can't do is shoot threes. And that said, I think if they make the right move and trade Pascal Siakam for a king's ransom, young talent and picks, and but also some guys who could be able to compete as early as next year, this team could get down into the high percentages for the lottery in a year where there is Victor Wembanyama, who, as we've discussed, is an alien.
Yes.
And there's Scoot Henderson, who in any other year is a number one pick, and there's some guys beyond that. It's a deep draft at the top. I think that's where the Raptors are going. And my guess, if I had to guess, between OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam. I think either one could be the one to go, but I think there's a better logical case for a medium rebuild, like a rebuild as early as next year.
Right.
If you move Siakam rather than OG.
We know, Bruce, because the NBA being what it is, I mean, yes, there was the process, flawed though it was, but NBA ownership likes results sooner than later. In Toronto, would MLSE be risk-averse and not want to go back, you know, down into the lower part of the league, or want to fight hard to maintain whatever position you think they have right now?
Well, this has been a weird year. Like, I don't think the fan base has enjoyed this season. They haven't enjoyed this team. I think if you have a bad year, like if it's just this year, and that's the trick here, is can you do a controlled demolition? Because right now they're like, I think, sixth or seventh from the bottom of the league. It hasn't the pieces just don't fit on this team. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting thing. We could go into that for a long time. I have my theories there. But I think that if you can be just a little bit worse this year, like if Fred VanVleet strains a hip muscle and he's out for, I don't know, a month or something, like that kind of stuff can snowball fast, and they can be bad just for this year as long as you make the right deal. And that's what we're making. I've tried to figure out, because it's, you know, something I like to do, what would be a good Pascal Siakam deal. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find a trade partner that allows you to be bad this year but also isn't just a pure future deal. Right. So it's going to be really, really tricky. It's hard to trade players making that much money who are that good for the value that you want. So far, I think Gary Trent Jr. is the only guy out on the trade market, definitely, for the Raptors. Everyone else is in evaluation. But if they start to try to move OG and Pascal, I think people will be disappointed. But I think it's okay. And I think MLSE, I would say that Masai Ujiri, I would say with confidence, he has the confidence of MLSE, and he can get away with pretty much anything he wants to do.
Thank you, by the way, for controlled demolition. That's a great line, and I may steal it. Thanks for this, Bruce.
Dave, always my pleasure, my friend.